TCL is a proud sponsor of the 1500 ESPN Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by Wolves. Now talking all things Timberwolves, the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Yes, indeed. Another edition of Raised by Wolves, taped on a Thursday afternoon. And Manny Hill, Danny Cunningham, we're here with you. Very special guest on the phone, and let's not waste any more time. Jim Peterson, television analyst for the Minnesota Timberwolves. For how many years now, Jim Pete, have you been doing this?
Well, combined radio and TV, 21 years. This is my 21st year, so... Yeah, I did. I started out doing radio with Chad Hartman, and then I went to TV for 1 year with Sean Grandy, and then Michael Thompson came in, and he worked with Hanny, and I went back to radio with Chad, and then the 2003-2004 season is when I took over the TV spot for Michael, who went to the Lakers, by the way. Michael's been with the Lakers since 2003-2004, and then... Yeah, then Hanny and I, and then Ben's and I, so here we go. This is already Ben's. Ben's has already been here like 7 years.
Yeah, that's crazy because, yeah, it was the second year under Rick Adelman, right? The 12-13 season, right, that Ben's came in?
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible how time flies. Okay.
Yeah.
So this week, obviously it's been a big week for the team, but, like, how crazy is this week been for you guys on the broadcast team with just all the changes with Tibbs departing and Ryan Saunders stepping in? I mean, this has been a crazy week, but I would imagine it's been a fun week for you guys too.
Yeah. You know what, Manny? I really kind of, you know, we talk, you know, we text. And I was on the radio show with Judd yesterday, and you know, sometimes you need some therapy, you know, and you need to open a vein up. I don't know to what degree I'm going to do that during this podcast, but Tibbs was a very traumatic. It was a traumatic tenure for me and for a lot of people. Just the way that he operated, the way he treated people. The way he either communicated or didn't communicate with individuals and groups and different parts of the organization. It was a very, very difficult. It was a difficult 3 years for, well, whatever, two and a half, whatever it is, whatever it's been. And so when he was let go, I just felt like, you know, so many people were let out of prison. You know, like there was, it's like literally was so oppressive. Everybody's kind of walking around on eggshells all the time. You know, one of the things that, I mean, Tibbs, and it always kills me too, like, and this is just goes, like, for, you know, like I said, I've been with the team for 21 years, so I've seen a lot of coaches come and go. It always astounds me when coaches come in, and I don't know, you know, this is true across all sports. You know, I don't know if the Wild people have stories or if the Vikings people have stories or the Twins people have stories of new regimes coming in who, for whatever reason, I just don't know why you wouldn't do this. Why you wouldn't check out the lay of the land.
Yeah.
And who are the people? And who are the people that can help you? Who are the people I need to connect with and I need to treat, you know, the right way. And so, like, coming into the Timberwolves organization, it blows me away how many of these coaches come in here. And, you know, this, I don't know if you know the director of security for many, many years, like since the beginning of the Timberwolves, Bob Getters.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Getters, Minneapolis cop, Minneapolis detective. Very, very important to the organization, to Glenn Taylor. And these coaches would come in, and they just would not understand who Bob Getters is. And they would treat him like crap. And, you know, and so it would happen from regime to regime. And I just go, what is wrong with people? And the same thing is true with me. Like, you know, it's like I've been here for 21 years. I think it's a good idea to maybe check in with someone like myself. And you know, if you don't want to give me access to practice, that's fine. I've been able to go to practice, not been able to go to practice. That's fine. But, like, to come in and, like, intentionally, like, alienate someone like myself, which I don't even think it makes any sense, is exactly what Tidge did. Like, he basically told the coaching staff, like, don't talk to me, because he felt like they were giving me information. Because, what I do during a broadcast, I talk about the game like a coach. I try to. I watch video, and I will point out the good things, and I will point out the bad things. And for whatever reason, like, Tibbs, like, didn't want me pointing out, and so I think, I don't know if he thought the coaches were giving me inside information or whatever, but he actually told them to stop talking to me.
Wow.
Which is an unbelievable scenario. Like, why would you do that? So, I don't know, it's just like that, that's like, for me to have that weight lifted, that sort of oppressive sort of, environment where, I was being sort of targeted, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And trust me, you guys know, is there anybody in the organization that loves the team more than me?
I can't think of one.
Not off the top of my head, Jim.
I mean, like I bleed Timberwolves. I mean, I love this organization. I love this team. I want them to win. It's my team. I want them to win. And so, anyway, it's just, that's kind of my, open up the vein a little bit. It's just like, for me to have that energy gone is, and I'm sure there's, dozens of people that could tell a similar story, because, one of the reasons why Tibbs got fired in Chicago was for this very thing.
Yeah.
His he was not a guy that played very well with others, And so, like, he doubled down on that in Minnesota. He didn't learn from any of what happened in Chicago. He doubled down on it.
Wow.
And that's on him. So, like, I don't have any sympathy for someone who treats people so poorly. And I got to tell you the other thing, too, is that Ethan Kasson, the president of the team, like, I'm telling you, Ethan bent over backwards. Like, Ethan tried to do so many initiatives and things to try to open things up. And I don't know. I have a tremendous amount of respect for Ethan and what he was able to do. He's being vilified in some ways. Like, I don't know if you guys have seen some of the tweets that Woj put out there. Like somehow, Ethan was doing things to hurt Tibbs. That's not the truth. Ethan tried to do so much to help him. And I think Ethan has done a great job since he's come back, and I don't know. There's a lot of positive things that are happening now in my mind.
Jim, do you feel better that you got all that off your chest now?
Yes.
it just seems like there was so much boiled up that you wanted to get out, and we're thrilled you did. But man, it seems like so much was going on, and it's been an incredibly tumultuous year. Whether it's been the Jimmy Butler situation or the Tibbs situation, how much do you think this team's just going to benefit from a little bit of stability for the rest of the season now?
Well, I think they're going to benefit a lot. I mean, like, I just think that, I just think that we're having positive, vibes. Like, what? Because I just think that a lot of people that sit there and watch the games, whether it's on TV or whether it's in the arena, I think that it got to a point where I was tired of hearing Tibbs bellow and scream. I think the players probably are in a little more better place. I think, that's their coach, and they see him in all different kind of scenarios. But I was never really around Tibbs unless it was during the game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, I didn't get access to practice or shoot around. I didn't get to sit there and hobnob with the coaches, like, on the plane or whatever when I'd see him. So, like, what the players did. So I think the players probably were in a little better place than I think the general public, that were so, like, sort of turned off by, the way that Tibbs would talk sometimes. But I don't know. It's good to have, Ryan. That the storyline we have now to talk about is such a wonderful story, because Ryan's such a wonderful kid and has worked so hard, has been so loyal. That I just think it's a great storyline, something else to be able to look forward to.
Yeah, you could kind of see it just, I mean, well, not even kind of. I mean, you could totally see it at the end of the game on Tuesday night in OKC, like these players just seem to gravitate to Ryan just as not just as a coach, but as a human being. Like it just seemed like they were so thrilled for him to have that moment to win his debut as a head coach. And you can just almost see, and again, I'm not in that locker room. I don't know any of these players personally. I mean, you're probably closer to a lot of these guys than me or Danny would be, but it just seems like on the outside looking in that there was sort of this maybe a weight lifted off of their shoulders as well, because to Danny's point, it seems like now there's going to be some stability now for the rest of the season, and the whole question of, you know, is Tibbs going to be here or is he not going to be here? That question has now been answered, and now the team as a whole can just focus on playing basketball and getting better as the season progresses here.
Yeah, because the players know that when their coach is embattled, you know, players read, the players hear, they see what's happening. They, you know, when Tibbs is announced and the fans are booing him, you know, I mean, it kind of gives you a little indication that things aren't going all that great. You know what I mean? when your coach is being announced and the fans at your home arena are booing him. Which, you know, that died down some. But, yeah, I just think that one of the things Ryan did when he first took over is that he sat there and he met with every single player. And I think that that's something that doesn't always happen with coaches. I think coaches, you know, they get so focused on what they're doing in terms of, you know, watching video and game planning. And there's other things. There's so many other things that go into being a head coach that I think sometimes as a head coach you can lose your priorities in terms of what's important, in terms of how you do your job. And so I think connecting with players has to be really super high on your list in order for players to feel valued and like they're part of what's going on. And so that's one of the things I learned from Cheryl Reeve, is that Cheryl would meet with players. She'd meet with the captains a lot. You know, she would make sure that they would understand what needs to be done, and she would send the captains marching orders. The captains would go back in the locker room, and they would do their job as leaders. They would disseminate game plans or whatever. But then she'd also meet with all different kind of subsets of groups. She'd meet with the starters. She'd meet with the bench players. She'd meet with the guards. She'd meet with the post. She'd meet with the young players. And then she'd meet with everybody individually, so there was never any question as to what your role was. And I think that someone like Tyus Jones, I just don't know how much, like, Tibbs talked to Tyus. And, you know, we would try to get Tibbs to, you know, we'd be doing a story, like Marty would try to go interview Tibbs and you know, try to get a soundbite of him saying something nice about Tyus, and he just wouldn't do it.
Yeah, good luck.
You know, I mean, like, so Danny, like, you know, it's just a frustrating thing. I just don't know how much Tibbs connected with the guys on an individual basis. I think that wasn't happening. And I think a lot of guys were very frustrated with what their role was, that what their future was, you know, what they could do to be more of an integral part. And so I just think it's just a very different environment now, you know, and I think Ryan's got to do a better job of connecting with guys like he has as an assistant coach.
Isn't part of it, and you know, I kind of asked you about this yesterday when you were with us, with me and Judd, about just knowing your personnel and knowing the personalities of the players that are on your team. Like, if you look at Tibbs probably vibed better with that Bulls team in Derrick Rose's MVP year because those personalities were different. You have a Carlos Boozer and a Joakim Noah back at that time, and a younger Luol Deng, but those are different personalities than a Karl Anthony Towns and an Andrew Wiggins or a Tyus Jones or somebody like that. And maybe that is where the disconnect was, that, yeah, those guys in Chicago could handle Tibbs's coaching style differently because those personalities were different. And where it seemed like Tibbs fell short here was that he didn't understand that you can't coach Karl Anthony Towns the same way you coached Joakim Noah or Carlos Boozer or somebody like that.
Well, look, I mean, you know, the team that Tibbs inherited in Chicago was completely different than the team that Tibbs inherited in Minnesota.
Right.
The team that he inherited in Chicago was already a playoff team. You know, he took over Vinny Del Negro.
Yep.
They were a 500 team. They had most of the guys you're talking about on the team already. So Tibbs is taking over a veteran team that had been in the playoffs. You know?
Yeah.
And they already had all these guys on the team. The team he inherited in Minnesota had not been in the playoffs in you know, 11 years or whatever, you know, 12 years. And, you know, and they had a bunch of young players. And so Tibbs got here, he's like, I don't want to coach young players. I want to, you know, so then he started, you know, bringing in so that's why we became the Timber Bulls. You know what I mean? He brought in Taj, he brings in Derek, he brings in, you know,
trades for Jimmy.
Aaron Brooks.
Brings in Jeff Teague. Brings in, like, and not that bringing in veteran players is a bad idea, but I'm just saying, like, when you draft Chris Dunn and, you know, you trade away Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine and, you know, and you try to bring in, you know, more veteran guys that you're familiar with. I mean, like, he wasn't interested in trying to develop talent and to build something. He wanted to go right from, you know, 0 to 100, which is you know, fine. But I don't know. They're different scenarios. And you're right. I just don't know that he connected with the young guys or was willing to put up with the kind of mistakes that young guys make, or maybe like the lack of competitive flair that he thought they needed to have. So I don't know. It's just, it was, you know, it is what it is. You know, I mean, I think that you have to go through and kind of rehash some of this stuff, just, you know, just cathartically from the fan standpoint. But on the other hand, you know, I might be ready to move on too. Like I've had enough of Tibbs. You know what I mean? I don't need to talk about him anymore. Like, I, you know, it's like, I just kind of want to move on from it because it is what it is. But thank God we've got Karl-Anthony Towns. And I think that what we saw from Andrew Wiggins the other night in OKC, I mean, if Ryan Saunders, if what it took was someone believing in Andrew to get him to play like he did against OKC, then I'm all for it, you know?
And that's kind of where I want to go next. Is unlocking Wiggins kind of the biggest goal for Saunders? And if so, is that what gets the interim tag removed for him?
I don't know. You know, I think obviously, you know, Ryan, you know, he's going to get an opportunity to coach, and I think that now that you know, we've got this sort of interim situation where, you know, who is going to be the leader of this team, and what is the right way to sort of top down, sort of get a model of what a team how a team should be built, and so. You know, I mean, I'm personally of the impression that the best way to build a team is to hire a president of basketball operations and let that person build a team. And that means he gets to pick the coach. That means that he gets to bring in the personnel, the people that are going to decide, you know, what player personnel are on the team and what trades are going to be made and who's going to be drafted. You know what I mean? That they get a chance to put together their analytics department. And that they get to set the culture for the team, and that person, whoever it is, should be somebody that is able to play nice with the business side. You know what I mean? Like the next person that should be hired, whether it's Scott Layden getting to be kept on, or somebody else that's hired, that person, I think it's absolutely vital that they connect with Glenn Taylor, B, that they connect with the business side and Ethan Cassidy and that whole, and they have to understand the business of basketball. And then see that they are able to hire a coach that they resonate with, that they can be able to work with, that they can, you know, build a team with, the person that they bring in has a perspective on the game that's modern, you know what I mean, like offensively and defensively, that they have a vision for how to play a modern game. So there's a formula with which you build a franchise and a team, and I think that I think it starts with the top down. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't know that you want to, like, just hire Ryan and have him be here, and then you have to hire someone to come in, and will they get along, and will they have the same? If they do, great. You know what I mean? But I'm saying, like, what's the proper way to go about this? You've got to be a process. It's got to be a process-driven situation. You guys know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think you want to sit there and foist a coach onto a president of basketball operations if that president is truly the person that you want to set your culture. They've got to get along. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want it. You don't want to start out with, like, an adversarial relationship. You know what I mean? So there is a process. But, Ryan's the kind of kid, though, that I think he's going to have a really modern way of looking at the game. I think he's going to be someone that a lot of people could work with. And, we'll see how it goes. You know, I think all this is just wait and see. I'm speculating on some of this, and I'm just saying how I would personally like to see it done. And, my way is just one way,
All right. Now, looking forward to tomorrow night's game, how excited are you for the game ops staff to not have to blare music as loud and as fast as they can as soon as they're done announcing the coach's name?
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's going to be fun. The best part about it is that we got back-to-back home games. So we got Dallas and the Pelicans. And we're not going to have to wait another day in between games. We're going to get two in a row. So that's going to be fun.
You think I would imagine Ryan's going to get a pretty good pop from the crowd, right? When Sean Parker announces his name.
Yeah, I would say, I just know that for Ryan, he won't even really notice it because he'll be so focused on what the first play is and how they're going to match up and all the things that are going to be swimming through his mind. You know, there's so much that goes on, and I think that moment will be more for the fans than it will be for Ryan. Ryan will notice it. I'm sure Ryan's mom Debbie will really love it, and the girls, and his sisters, and his wife, and it'll be a good moment for everybody. But it sure was fun. I mean, I can't tell you how fun it was in Oklahoma City. Like, for those that were there, it was one of the most special moments for me in my Timberwolves broadcasting history. Like, just to be able to be there and have that experience, and then have the win, and all that meant, and. So hopefully these next two games at Target Center will be special for our fans as well.
Well, I think this is going to be a pretty fun moment for the organization and the players and everybody, the fans, and for you guys on the broadcast team. It's going to be exciting. You got a pretty exciting opponent coming in too. I mean, you got Luka Doncic coming in, and this might be the last time we see Dirk Nowitzki in the. And at Target Center, who knows with that? But it's going to be a fun Friday night, I think.
Yeah, and I'm excited for Mr. Taylor. You know, he's been in Florida. He's coming back home, and he's he deserves. He and his wife Becky have been just super supportive and great owners, and they deserve to have some fun too. And I'm looking forward to seeing them, and us all having a ball. That's for sure.
Awesome stuff, my friend. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it, Jim.
Thank you, Danny. Thank you, Manny.
All right, that's Jim Peet, TV analyst for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Wow, that was awesome.
A lot of fun stuff.
A lot of fun stuff. We certainly appreciate the time from Jim Peet there. If you want to check out this podcast and all of our Raised by Wolves podcasts, you can find them at podcast1.com. iTunes, for the time being, 1500ESPN.com. But of course,
stay tuned on that.
Stay tuned. We got some big changes coming up for the 1500 AM station here in the Twin Cities coming up here starting next week. For Danny Cunningham, Real D Cunningham on Twitter, and I'm Manny Hill at MannyHill84. Follow Jim Peet on Twitter, also Jim Peterson at Jim Peet Hoops. On Twitter as well. Thanks to Jim Peet for joining us. Thanks to you for listening, and enjoy your Wolves basketball. We'll talk to you next time on Raised by Wolves.